see you coming back in here with ducky jumpsies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jumpsies.
Look at anybody going sitting up a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Hello, how's it form? Welcome to the Three Man Weave, the Boz at EGA podcast. Morris Brosnan here. I'm joined as usual by Mr. Mark Farley.
What's the crack, Morris?
Not much now. How about you?
Oh, 5 o'clock. Well, actually, no, sorry. I exaggerated. It was 5:30 this morning when I was awoken by the scars of the midges that have bit me over the weekend.
They've been lethal.
A great weekend for GAA, but a bad weekend for... Well, I suppose a good weekend for midges. They got their fill, but a bad weekend for sufferers from... What would your mother say? Sweet blood. You must have sweet blood. And geez, I must have sweet blood because the midges are all over me.
Also here is PJ Brown. PJ, what's the crack?
Very good. Thank you very much, Marth. Apart from the terrible loss for the Gary Hurlers at the weekend.
Yeah, a shocker. We'll talk about that later on in the show. We're also going to talk to Billy Lee, Limerick football manager, who had a serious result at the weekend. Kind of great to see, wasn't it?
Wasn't bad, no. It wasn't bad at all. I think Limerick might be focusing on the football this week. This year, they might give the hurling a miss.
Hurling away, yeah.
let the lads puck away at it there.
But there's only one place to start, really. There's always kind of, at this time of year, there's always a huge controversy that looms large. Usually kind of comes up mid-May, lasts for a couple of weeks until the serious business kicks in. And who saw it coming? But last night, it emerged. Henry Shefflin's outfit on the Sunday game, lads.
He's gone. He's stepped back. I don't know what's mad about the outfit, but I like the idea behind it. I like, you know, he was kind of going away. In case anyone who hasn't seen it, the three-piece suit was all the rage there for a while, and he was sitting beside Donal O'Cusick, a man who maybe was one of the originators of the three-piece suit of the Sunday game.
I mean, no one has more sartorial elegance on the Sunday game than Donal O'Cusick.
Exactly, but what Henry did was he went for a more smart casual look. He went with the shirt and pullover.
Yeah, the kind of the temporary geography teacher look. It was it wasn't just the shirt and the jumper, it was the colour of the jumper, yeah, combined with
aqua blue. I think we're going aqua blue
combined with the kind of design on the
what was on the shirt.
It looked like birds. I think
it was like, I it was kind of like a dinosaur or something.
It was a bold move that rolled that out on the very first week of the Sunday.
It was, but set down a good early precedent, and it'll be interesting to see now
who'll match it.
Yeah, what's going to show up now next week?
Just come to me. I've settled on pterodactyl.
He should have phased it in, right? Like, you don't just rock up day one and totally go off script. Like, he should have gone with, you know, the kind of the Claude Puel look, which is like the suit jacket over a jumper, and then he slowly phased it back with a normal white shirt underneath, and then gradually he emerges to, he would have, like, suddenly then he could have phased it in and it wouldn't have been nearly as much of a saga about it now. But right now it's a huge controversy.
Are you advocating like costume changes mid-show?
No.
Or that he brings this in stages over a few weeks?
Nobody knows more about peaking for championship than Henry Shefflin. So by the same logic, he should have just slowly phased it in and moved towards that.
Daly had gone with the three-piece with no tie, or no Dickie Bokes. Dickie Bokes have been seen on the Sunday game over the years. He'd gone for that on the live show. So, like, you wonder, should him and Don Logue have swapped? Or, like, should they decide their analysts based on, you know, if this was like a wedding where, you know, during the day you've got your Donal Logues and your Jackie Terrells in the full suit, and then come the evening time you have the lads with the ties off or just the shirt and no jacket.
On the show itself, right, like, I don't want to really dwell on this, and I think people can take punditry and coverage way too seriously and kind of lambast and stuff, but I do think, like, without getting, you know, overly negative, as we don't like to do in this show, Mark, The coverage itself, I think, was really kind of disappointing from a perspective of, like, whatever about the fact that the highlights are shown for other games, the fact that as a production show, they decided to dedicate the first 45 minutes to the two games that were live on RT that day and show extended highlights plus extended analysis didn't really make sense when the games were on already and the other games weren't on television, which has been a really common criticism all throughout the year. On top of that, the treatment of the Joe McDonagh Cup, which for me was such an insult. And whatever about, right, You can pay, this happens during the league, like, or pay them lip service and read out the results of Division 4 or Division 3, or pay them lip service and read out the results of the Chris Ring or the Nicky Rackard. The Joe McDonagh is the same competition. Like, the top two teams, the finalists for that, are going to play in a preliminary quarter final in the same competition. We're going to see these teams this year, and to not even give them the service of reading out a result or discussing it in any way, just such an insult. And such a really, really easy argument against the tiers, which looks like it's coming in now, but it's totally understandable why players and managers would feel hesitant about that when they look at the way that teams like Leash and Offaly were treated at this weekend.
Yeah, man, that was probably the biggest game of the weekend. Oh, not sorry, the biggest, because you've got the Munster. But outside of Munster, it was going to be more telling than any of the other games in the Leinster Championship, in terms of two evenly matched teams and two teams in a different trajectory, and how important it was for Offaly to beat Leash. And or if they were going to beat Leash, and the fact that Leash managed to get the win over them was a massive story, but you hear very little about it.
And even just from a perspective of, like, as a narrative arc, I remember we spoke to Paul Cody last year about Carlo, who spoke about the idea about, you know, it's weird to see Carlo Harris walking around wearing Kilkenny jerseys, Carlo youngsters walking around wearing Kilkenny jerseys, but that's what they see on TV in the Sunday game, and that's what they kind of look towards. And then you think about it, like, people like Ross King coming back in for Leash after everything he's gone through for this year and hitting 4 points, the narrative around that. Eddie Brennan coming on this podcast and, you know, telling us outright he's going to play like a brilliant style of hurling, that he has his philosophy, his inbuilt philosophy, and suddenly he's involved in like a 50-score cracker in Tullamore, living up to that. The idea of, like, you get players like, you know, young Ushin Kelly, 2-3, like, this, for the last 2 years we've been here, there's nothing coming through in Offaly, like, there's definitely no young hurlers. This kid is younger than me and he's turning up against this Leash team and kind of bucking that trend and what that meant, and that we get to know nothing about that and see nothing about it because they can't even give them the lip service of giving them, you know, 2 minutes to discuss any of it or show a 30-second highlight reel.
Well, it would seem very simple. They should at the very least acknowledge that the game's happened, but
given they're in the same competition,
Even they are, especially that, but I don't think this problem is going to be solved on the Sunday game. I think it'll have to be that there needs to be another night of highlights, and whether that's on a Saturday, on maybe on the Monday night, as on TG Carher, there is that at the moment.
Yeah, I checked that out, and they're not going to have Joe McConnell highlights tonight on the Monday night TG Carher highlights program, which is great, which is a brilliant show, but they're not going to have Joe McConnell highlights on that either.
I think they are actually going to have live streaming on the GA website this year for Joe McDonagh games, which is increased coverage. But I mean, it just seems so obvious and easy to do with that. Why aren't you doing this last year? Why isn't we like, why is it it's just four games? I mean, I don't understand why you can't do a little bit more. They seem they're so far behind. Like, it just, like, it's so, they have a platform on the GA website, people will watch those games. Like, you tell me people are watching, like, in the Fitzgibbon Cup final.
Semi-finals, or, yeah. Yeah, the views,
they're
racked up.
There's, like, 3,000 people alone on just, like, a YouTube channel. There is an audience there for these games. People want to watch these games, and why aren't you putting them out there?
The other thing is the RT player. I tried to watch the Sunday game this morning, sat through a load of ads. Then the first came up, it was the Tipperary Cork game, which I'd seen live, so I was like, I'm going to skip past this. So I saw there was a little break thing, you know, in the line, went go ahead of that, sat for another few minutes through ads, then it was the Clare Waterford game. I was like, I should have seen this already, fast forward through that, click the next button, thing crashed, had to go back to the start again.
I
had to sit through three different sets of ads to get to the part to see a match that I hadn't seen before.
And I'm kind of loath sometimes to blame RTE for all of this, because you saw John Horne's comments last week, which actually came out after we recorded our podcast, so we didn't get to talk about them. But John Horne had kind of laid blame at the fact that, you know, RTE or other broadcasters, he name referenced RTE for chasing numbers and not showing these lower games.
I thought that was, of course they're going to choose numbers. They're a television station.
I don't know what his point was there, really, or the fact that, you know, this is such an easily addressed situation in broadcast deals, which are very easily renegotiable, which were agreed before they changed the format in the first place anyway, so surely you need to renegotiate them. We've talked about this before on the show. But just, like, it bears saying again, the teams that are involved in the same competition this year and they don't even read out the results on a Sunday game, despite giving 45 minutes to games that were on TV already, like, it defies belief.
I'm okay with, like, having that extended analysis of the games, because you've got time to think about it and look at it. That's good. Especially, we saw last night at Parky Keeve, they had that kind of new angle and they had some new gadgets as well, it looks like, very awkwardly placed on the desk in front of Donal Cusick. But I'm okay with that extended analysis. Why show highlights at all? I mean, like, people can watch, if people want, someone wants to watch the game, this isn't like 20 years ago where you, if you missed a game earlier in the day and you forgot to record it, that was it. You never got to see it. I mean, you can go watch back and watch these games on the RT player now whenever you want. Or this highlights on the GAA website.
Yeah.
I mean, just have extended highlight, have that extended analysis, but don't. I mean, like, I don't see why you need.
Mean like sort of almost like a Neville and Carragher Monday Night Football, yeah, that 7 exactly, yeah, to 7:30 p.m. slot where they're just like breaking down one of the big games of the weekend or a team that they haven't broken down before.
Which I think people would enjoy that as well.
Definitely, yeah.
And it's really hard for them to cover. Like, there's over 20 intercounty games on this weekend. It's really hard for them to cover them all. But the fact that they're dedicating so many resources to such a really, really minute area, which was already covered during the day, is just so frustrating.
It probably limits the analysis as well, that you have to sit through 10 or 15 minutes of highlights as well of each game.
We'll talk about the Munster games later on in the show, but just on the Saturday night game, which is Dublin and Kilkenny, probably the standout moment was a masterclass in man-marking by Greg Kennedy, who developed an amazing insight to, I suppose, intercept that ball.
When you saw the reverse angle, you said he actually stepped back to mark. Was it Colin Finley, I think?
Yeah, it was Colin Finley.
He actually stepped back to mark him. It wasn't he just happened to be standing there and the ball was coming towards him. He recognised that there's a free man here. I need to step back and kind of ensure the slide doesn't get the ball. Like, yeah.
Cork's full back line, or sorry, Dublin's full back line have no excuse when their selector can come onto the pitch and literally show them how to do it.
Although that's been quite unfair to Owen O'Donnell, who is
amazing.
He was incredible, especially in that first half. He had so many blocks and hooks, and he's one of the best fullbacks in the country right now.
Yeah, I think like for Dublin, it was definitely a missed opportunity, but on that team, like, there is real solace in performances of people like Owen O'Donnell. Chris Gormley, despite his theatrics, was amazing. He had an outrageous score in the second half from the sideline. Those kind of players are, like, they're in good hands, I suppose. It's just maybe developing a bit more forwards around that. But the foundations are definitely there.
I do kind of wonder that they were made look a little bit better than they were in that first half by Kilkenny's tactics, especially the puck outs.
Yeah.
You're like bombing it down on top of a very big half back line. It just made like no sense whatsoever. I know TJ Reid did say after the game that it had been in their game plan to go short in the first half. But
what happened to that plan?
I mean,
yeah,
like, no, it seems like no one told Darren Brennan that. Because all the puck outs were down the middle. There was more variety in the second half, and they changed it up a little bit, and that made a huge difference then.
Yeah, yesterday I was thinking the same thing. I was like, this tactic of Anthony Nash hitting all the puck outs to Brendan Maher, I don't see the logic behind it. Why hit it straight to Tipperary? But they persisted with it for a very long time until Maher got a brilliant point towards the end as well. I think that was the score of the game, where he got cleaned out over his shoulder after catching the puck out. And launched a great point from his own half.
But great to bring the Maher back after that knee injury as well.
Yeah,
they playing like really well too. Actually, talking to Jamie Callanan a few weeks ago, I can't remember what the interview was for, but he said Brendan Maher has come back even stronger, even fitter than he was before the injury.
I'm a big Brendan Maher fan, both because of the way he plays and also because of how he kind of, like, he's a man who is literally involved in this media train that we talk about, given his role outside of hurling. And yet every time he does an interview, he books that trend and says something really interesting. Mm. Like, you saw him on the pitch after the game talking about the duty he felt to the people of Tipperary after what happened last year, like something that clearly weighed in his mind. And it's also nice to see him kind of acknowledge that and admit that, yeah, like, that was something that really, really kind of, I suppose, we used as a motivating factor, but it was definitely there, the fact that we basically let down Tipperary people last year.
Yeah, he also has interesting backstory. I see him just be at the things. I can't think of the name of it now. It's like a trad sort of weekend, sort of school, summer school nearly. I can't think of what is the name of it. But anyway, for trad musicians. And I see Brendan Maher just be up. Our club hosts them sometimes, and Brendan Maher just be up helping out with that as well. So he has clearly great interests outside of GAA too.
Coming for all or giving out, Mark, there's more going on than just the upper tiers I heard on this weekend.
Exactly. Who would we be? We'd be the pot calling the kettle black if we were to give out about RT not covering the lower tiers. It's time to bring back one of the great segments of last year, around the so-called weaker counties.
Nobody counted us in all year. The media.
Where did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media.
Obviously, we're going to get to Limerick's unbelievable win over Tipperary a little bit later on. But when we talk to Billy Lee, but there was almost another massive upset in the Munster Football Championship, with Waterford narrowly losing to Clare. And there was a couple of things of this I just wanted to mention. One was Benji Whelan, the Waterford manager. I think he's up on our Instagram. You need to check out. He was the slickest looking manager I've seen in the intercounty game in a long time. He was really dressed for the occasion. He had some sort of sunglass.
I think they're just sunglasses.
Sunglasses, but they were a style that I haven't seen in a long time. He looked like George Carlin in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and
a reference Morris is definitely not getting there.
And also just a special mention to the Waterford goalkeeper, Darren Mulhern, who lined out in goals for Waterford at 46 years of age.
Darren Mulhern is an incredible story. Like, he was on the Waterford senior panel 30 years ago as a minor, but because he chose to prioritise his leaving cert, would you believe it, rather than play football, he had to leave the panel, never got back on until... a few weeks ago, when he got a call from Benji Whelan because Aaron Beresford had gotten injured, and they were in need of a keeper.
It's incredible.
Oh, savage.
Like, you know, they always say, I'd look at the football, the hurling will be there after the leaving, sir. Don't worry about it for, you know, a couple of months. Well, there's proof that maybe you should worry about it. also, this was a weekend, I think, for the almost underdog story. Offaly almost beat Meath, but Meath ran out winners in the end. But I think everybody acknowledged, as John Mon, the Offaly manager, pointed out, that Offaly were actually the better team of the day. I really liked John Mon's post-match comments. He was he seemed to be more enthusiastic nearly in defeat than he would have been if they'd won. There's a great commentator in the post-match interview. He said, the morale, the spirit, it couldn't be better. We've some wonderful lads that show great leadership and charisma. Niall Darby spoke before in the dressing room, and I felt like talking out myself. He's such a wonderful character. Great inspirational words from Mon. It will remain to be seen, though, if they can do anything in the back door, because every team now going into this back door seems to have renewed hope and optimism, including Wicklow, who again almost beat Kildare, but unfortunately ran out of the wrong side of that result. And John Evans had a very similar type of... I suppose, attitude to that loss. And in the post-match, he said, these guys are pawing the ground. They're ready to go again. I've never heard the phrase pawing the ground in relation to humans before.
It gives you an image of they're like caged, and they're like they're trying to dig their way out under the cage.
I wonder, like, the pitch in Offram might be, if anyone's going, why is this pitch all cut up? It's just because there's a load of lads just standing. Like a horse ready to go, just dragging their feet.
And the one theme I think we learned from the Premier League season this year is that all it takes is to take off the shackles to let a team loose. And I guess that's what they're doing right now. They have them locked up and ready to go.
Yeah, exactly. And moving on as well to the hurling, London, quick word on them. They lost to Meath. But the big story there was that their hurls were unfortunately lost in transit on the way over from London, which is, like, if you talk about, like, players, GA players, sports people in general, are so sort of set in your ways. You know, some people will have to put on the sock on the left foot first. They have to do that every time. And if as much as that went wrong, you're kind of thrown off your game. Imagine arriving to a championship hurling match and your hurl isn't there.
We should point out, they didn't line out without hurls. They were they did find replacements.
Yes. Mead kindly offered them some replacements. But I saw a great tweet from Paddy Hearn, which is like showing one of the, from the ground hurling days back in the late 1800s.
Yeah.
These might do. So you'd wonder if they were, did they get the right sizes or anything like that. Also, in the couple of just results from the Joe McDonough and the Nicky Rackard, and of course the Chrissy Ring that are worth pointing out. In the Chrissy Ring, Roscommon getting a win over Kildare 20 points to 115 was a massive shock, really.
It's amazing, yeah, because last year, I think Kildare, obviously holders in this competition, weren't allowed to get promoted, but bet them by 24 points. And then Roscommon, not only to beat them by running off the 5 points, to do it with 14 men, they had Peter Callaghan sent off just after half time, and yet they beat, it just goes to show the competitive of those kind of like lower divisions. It's the same thing, we talk about this in football as well a lot, like the outside of, say, the top maybe 6 to 8, the tiers below that are really, really close. Like, anybody can beat anybody winning that.
Yeah, exactly. And that also goes to the same can be said about the Nicky Racker Cup, where Sligo beat Louth in somewhat of an upset. Sligo finished top of Division 3B, I think it was, or 3A maybe, and Louth had finished bottom of 2B. So that was one where it could have went either way. We spoke about Louth needing a good, they were talking about needing a good start last week. Unfortunately for them, they didn't get it. But the biggest shock, I thought, well, not really a big shock probably in the form this year, but if you had looked at it over the last couple of seasons, the big shock was Tyrone beating Mayo 115 to 15 points. Two divisions between them in the league, but Mayo's form since winning the league last year has just completely fallen through the floor.
Yeah, we were champions of Mayo on this podcast a lot last year. They didn't have, like, the certain players that just don't have, like Feeney, who we talked about. I think he was in our so-called weaker team of the league at the end of last year. Didn't play at the weekend, which is obviously a huge loss. Carl Freeman did. But it's such a bizarre thing that they could have won the league and then have essentially gone into free fall. Didn't win a single game in the Crystal Ring last year. Got relegated. Had a kind of a poor enough league this year, and now to come out and lose again, it's hard to put a finger on it.
Yeah, definitely. And finally, just on the Joe McDonagh, we obviously, the big story of the weekend was Laois beating Offaly. But the other one, and it's a story that kind of is kind of forgotten about, I think, because of the fact you've got Offaly down there now, is Antrim were another former hurling, one of the stronger teams in that competition, and they've kind of been in a bit of a decline as well. Kerry had finished ahead of them in the league, but Antrim got a win over them yesterday, which was a massive result for them, because I think that was one, again, it was exactly pretty much the exact same situation as Laois Offaly, where you have this up and coming team that were threatening one of the former strong teams, and for Antrim to sort of get that win, I think, was a big result for them.
Kerry beat them in the league back in January, but Antrim were missing all their Rory O'Cushion Dal players, so they've got them back now, and yeah, that made a big difference at the weekend.
Just on that team as well, like, not to get anybody in trouble, but just it's really, really great to see Antrim putting out clips from these games, because we can't see them anywhere else. So you can actually, if you go onto Antrim's GA's Facebook page, you can see Nicky McKeague's goal. You can actually see that. You can also see Nick McManus hit some outrageous long range scores, like three in a row, it looks like. And you can see some of those up there as well. So I don't know whether or not that was authorised, but I think it's a great thing to see. I remember last year Westmead took to actually Facebook booking live a couple of their Joe McDonagh Cup games, and it's brilliant to see that kind of initiative.
It was also interesting, just going back to the Wicklow Kildare game, which obviously we're focusing on the so-called weaker counties here, but just in terms of Kildare, there's lots of discussion about why does this keep happening to Kildare. They seem to be struggling again this year. But one point that was just kind of made in passing on the Sunday game was the fact that they have suffered a lot of injuries during club month, which I just thought was interesting given our discussions over the last few weeks about the same happening in Cavan and other places. So it definitely looks like club month has had a bad effect, or is having a very detrimental effect on preparation for counties.
Absolutely. And even to hear Keane O'Neill actually reference it after the Wicklow game, we might talk about that now. Obviously kind of a disappointing enough result in that they kind of scraped over the line losing at one stage, but straight away his Bothmans council talking about the fact that they didn't give a huge amount of time together, because in Kildare they play games slightly later in April. That's Owen Doyle got injured in a challenge game and then missed a club game. Jimmy Hyland only came on for his own club, having not started. Ben McCormack didn't play at all for Sarsfield. Like, all this because of the kind of pressures within club month, and then these players don't have enough time to kind of embed in. It's kind of, I suppose, it goes some way towards explaining how you can have so many absences after a month off, because it's not really a month off, they're all involved elsewhere, and it's potentially having a detrimental effect.
Just before we finish up here, we'll go back to the Clare and Waterford game to talk about Clare's winner, which came in the 31 minutes from full time. I mean, in recent GAA Championship history, it must be one of the earliest winners ever. I mean, maybe you'll go back to something like the 1894 Championship, and I'm sure there was a decisive point after 20 minutes of a game. But, in recent history, I mean, it's incredible. 31 minutes from the end, they got the decisive point from Jamie Malone.
It's interesting. Again, they're kind of going off just, the match report or the two-minute segment you get from the Sunday game and reading a couple of different match reports. If Waterford clearly seemed to play a blanket defence, but then I think they seemed to have opened up a little bit in the second half, and that's when they started to reel Clare in. So you do wonder then, if they had actually just gone for it from the start, could they have actually gotten a win here? Now, I don't know, because again, we're just speculating, because I read one report where it said Clare were really struggling to break down the Clare blanket defence or something like that, or all the men back. And then the next line was a quote from Benji Whelan saying, we weren't going to come here and just shut up shop. So I was confused as to what was going on at that match. But it seems that that was the thing. And it's like, well, geez, if you did, like Limerick, you were just caught Tipperary on the hop, who weren't clearly weren't up to it, weren't at the same level of intensity, for want of a better word, as Pat Bland would say, that perhaps Waterford could have gotten it.
I believe there was a former Brighton player playing. Brighton Hove Albion player playing for Waterford, Devi Hutchinson.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I think he made his championship debut.
Jeez, they could have Chris Hughton lining out. he's up to nothing else.
On that team, actually, about shape and stuff, because it's funny. Just on what you were talking about there, Paul Galvin and his colleague on Sunday wrote about Waterford and the idea that he thinks they might have some sort of connection to WIT and the Athletic Centre there, because they seem to play the game in bursts, so they don't do a huge amount. That's why they sit so deep, and then maybe have like a 5-10 minute huge burst and rack up a lot of scores in there, and that speaks in there. So he thinks they'll take a scalp in the league by doing that. That might be
Benji Whelan, actually, they said it on the Sunday game as well, that he had talked before the match about that it was about trying to turn these players into athletes, and that it sounded very much like an attitude that I think sometimes can really help a club GA, where it's just like, if you can be the fittest team, you're in with a good chance of winning.
Because it's like, on this idea of shape, we'll get to Billy Lee in just a second now, but just on this idea of shape, I watched the Derry Tyrone game as well, and like, it's only when you kind of see a game like that where, you know, Derry were played a, both teams played a kind of a reasonably defensive system, so Derry had two players in front of McShane at the back, but the amount of work that they had to go through to open up space for McShane. I remember Sean Kavanagh in his book wrote about Tyrone's system, and one of the most interesting tactical insights he gave in that book was he described their formation, all the names are different. So he spoke about an attacking shape with two flankers in terms of players out wide, one main target man up at the top, and then a lot of kind of what we on this podcast refer to as flyers in between, kind of to facilitate that. And that was really, really obvious at the weekend when you saw McShane on the inside and literally two players hugging the touchline outside him, trying to make shape, and even still they're trying to retain possession outside the 45, kind of working it over and back, just trying to allow him kind of that split second it takes to work some space. But it goes, you know, how many times have you stood on a terrace and heard somebody, just let it in, that cry? Like, you can't do that anymore. Like, the amount of actually like really intricate and kind of intelligent thought that has to go into letting it in the first place is so much that the work rate to work those kind of opportunities, like, you can totally understand why teams might be more attracted the way the game is right now to sitting really deep and trying to break quickly in terms of what it does, not from a defensive structure, but from an attacking structure, because it's easier to kind of work the ball that way, as opposed to, you know, you get a situation where Sludden is sitting on 45, well able of giving a really accurate kick pass inside, but is waiting for that split second of space to work the chance before he can actually do that. And it's, you know, the timing precision it takes to do that is really kind of delicate.
Yeah, like, there's even things like it was interesting, there's a couple of different pieces I was reading last week or over the last couple of weeks. One was the Ken Early piece, I presume that everybody's written or read about how soccer has changed, and he described one of the goals Liverpool had scored against Huddersfield, where they had allowed Huddersfield to pass the ball out from the goalkeeper short and then surrounded them. They were almost fighting. Like, that's a tactic that's happened in the lower echelons of junior GAA Gaelic football for a long time now, where it's like, let the cornerback have it. Leave a cornerback open for a kick out just so they go short to him so you can turn him over. And the other one I was reading a piece by Michael Hannan in the Anglo Cell last week, where he was talking about how GAA can learn from basketball. And like, this is obviously a comparison that's been made many a time, but he was just actually referencing how he was talking about, and say, obviously you've got the basketball minute, you have the playoffs are on at the minute, and there's five, possibly seven games in each of them. And he was talking about how there could be such a big swing from one game to the next in terms of the different results. And he was saying that is actually starting to, you could see that a little bit in GAA now as well, in terms of the Mayo Roscommon game from 2 years ago, where they drew in the Ireland quarterfinal the first day, and then Mayo absolutely hammered them the second day.
In the replay, yeah.
Yeah, and he was saying that the only change Mayo had really made between them 2 days was their approach to the Roscommon kick out. So in the replay, they pushed up extra men on the kick out, forcing Roscommon to go long, and made absolute hay. And that one change in terms of a shape made such a huge difference to the result, and something you could see happening a lot more often.
On that theme of, I suppose, playing the game in stages as well, because I think Mayo potentially do that. I think Tyrone are starting to do that as well. Like, if you look at the subs that they made, so Tyrone kicked 1-5 to come back into this game. They're actually behind in the second half. And if you look at the changes they made, it's Dar McCurry, Kyle Coney, Roy Brennan, Conor McAlesky, and Liam Rafferty. Really, really attacking changes that were clearly had their effect as well. And, you know, we just spoke about what Waterford are doing right now. Like, the maybe kind of game management, for want, you know, for want of a better phrase, really, is starting to get to a stage where you actually plan out like your set stages, and that you've got kind of different game plans as the game moves on. I remember Derek McGrath talking about this with Waterford, like they'd have three or four different strategies for a game and would implement them as the game kind of evolved depending on which way it went.
Your buddy McCurry, PJ, made a big difference for Tyrone coming on towards
It's good to see him back. I mean, he's going to have a big impact for Tyrone this year. He was out last year because I think he had work commitments. He's an electrician, I think, electrician or plumber, so he couldn't play, he couldn't commit to the amount of time needed to it. But yeah, he's the names you mentioned there, Mars, coming off the bench for Tyrone, they're like not just going to have an impact against Derry, they're the kind of players you're going to impact it like in a semi-final, All-Ireland semi-final, yeah, or All-Ireland final, where that's another way kind of Tyrone seem to have stepped it up this year. Yeah, I think, yeah,
they're also kind of lads, McCurry, Coney as well, they thrive in like a raucous atmosphere. Like, they're real lads, they're finishers
when it gets a bit looser. Yeah,
yeah, like Hurry's a great finisher in terms of like the goal was brilliant, but they're also probably great, they're also like great finishers as in towards the end of a match when it's in the melting pot and there's mouthing and there's, you know, people in the crowd roar and everything's getting heated. Curry does not just sticks it in the back of the net, but then turns around and does the Ronaldo celebration.
But when you're a tired defender at the end of the game, you're going to hate seeing those lads coming on. It's not just that they're going to run you into the ground, they're going to annoy the shit out of you.
Yeah, they're
going to
mentally beat you as well.
I forgot to mention one other Tyrone sub. I don't know if he has much of an impact or people have even heard of him, but Cullum Kavanagh also came on, which I probably left out.
Not a bad player.
The last time Billy Lee featured on this podcast was about this time last year. And we played audio from after they lost to Clare. And it was at a very different stage when he bemoaned the fact that because of an administrative error, they didn't even have players that could tug out. He'd submitted a team for a match program. It was accidentally submitted as the official team. So there was young lads who couldn't play. At the same time, he also, it was like a 10-minute segment, an interview with RTE at the time. He also hit out with the fact that they weren't being fed after games or training, and I suppose the approach that was taken to Limerick football, and it looked like a really bleak picture, and you kind of didn't know where this team was going to go. That was 2018. It'd been 6 years since the last Munster Championship victory. They hadn't won a game, they won one qualifier game in 2015. Other than that, they hadn't, and it was kind of hard to see where they're at. Fast forward a year, and they launched what was definitely the biggest shock of the summer so far, which is the beating Tipperary in Tipperary last weekend. So on that, we caught up with Billy to hear what changed in the meantime.
It's high, it's dropping in. The goalkeeper goes over the bar and the sides are level. We're supposed to have impartial journalists here around us. That's the cheer you have from all of them. Colin Walsh steadies himself, takes the kick. The ball goes over the bar. Four Monaghan takes the kick. Ball drops in high. And the ball is over the bar. And they're now leading by 3 points. 3 points separating the teams here.
Up the back door.
And the kick out will come.
He's going to go for a kick. That will be a tremendous goal if he lands it. Just he lands it, he does. He sends it in.
All right, I'm delighted to say now we're joined by Limerick manager Billy Lee. Billy, how's it going?
That's a bit honest. How are you?
Good, thanks. Yeah, good. Jeez, it must be a nice feeling to get a first round win in the Munster Championship.
Yeah, look, we're thrilled with it. It's just kind of a shot in the arm. We just need now at this point to know Johnny and let the lads get more confidence in themselves and belief in the work they're doing.
But last year, a lot of people would have seen how you spoke after the opening championship game and kind of your grievances with administrative issues or even things like getting meals for players and stuff like that. Has much changed in the meantime that might lead to an explanation for this positive result of the weekend?
I suppose, look, what led to the positive result is just the honesty of the boys and their willingness to learn and commit to it. Just on the jersey, you know, we set the targets of just, you know, respecting the jersey and earning the right to wear it and hold people accountable to that type of standards. And to be fair to them, it's all about the current bunch of players and what they're willing to try and do to achieve success for themselves.
Yeah, and I suppose on that team, like the idea of success, even when you look at it from the start of the year, what was your metric for what you were aiming for this year? Like, was this a game that you had been targeting from the year out, or were you more focused on performances as a year as a whole?
No, we didn't target the game. I look, a lot of where we are right now, the development was all about the league. And obviously, I suppose, I think this is about year two of this bunch coming together as a team. Someone has been there a bit longer, I know, but as a team and forming themselves and getting to know each other on many different levels. So it's year two, and you know, I just felt that year one was really a learning curve for them all, with what we undergone with the transition of players and Philip not coming in, etc. So it really was about being competitive with Division Four and see could we get up to the top end of the table. Our performances were decent. You know, I suppose with the team kind of beginning to come together, we didn't. Those were the two games we felt we could have done better and I got results out of it. We didn't. I suppose it's all part of the journey that they're on. And we just took the learnings from the league into this match to try and pitch ourselves against the team higher up to the rankings and see if we get to their intensity and what they were going to bring to it. So that was really the challenge, focus on performance, focus ourselves and develop ourselves.
It's funny you say that, Biddy, because a lot of people who might not have investigated would look at your league and just look at the table and see, you know, Limerick down in seventh, and they mightn't necessarily realise that there were some really positive performances along the way. Like, I remember, was it round three or four, where you came within a point of Leitrim, who everybody's talking about now is what they did in Division 4. So there was probably more positive than maybe the league position, like, appeared to the eye, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. Look, I felt in the day against Leitrim, I felt this game we should have won on the day. We had, I think, four or five goal chances we didn't take. I don't think we gifted them any on the day. It was definitely a game we should have won. We didn't. It was a hard one to take. But we took the positives from it in terms of what we're capable of competing in. So we just need to convert chances and improve on that area of the field. And look, Saturday night, thankfully, we got a higher percentage off and enabled us to put us in a winning position. So look, yeah, at the end of the day, the league performances were decent. Bad Derry game, I didn't think we performed against Derry, but that's one of the best events.
You know, when you talk about that, I suppose that idea, like, it's funny. I remember after the game you were speaking about players coming out of the league, players coming out of Limerick club football and maybe how set up they were to compete at Intercounty. And I suppose if that's kind of slightly lacking, the league is so much more important in terms of setting you up for a positive championship.
Well, it is, you see. Look, I mean, I suppose my view of it, and my own personal view, that, you know, the league kind of pits teams against their own level on any given year, you know. And you just got to find, if you've got to be competitive against those teams before you can start dreaming of going up against higher teams and pitching yourselves up there. And that's where the league kind of gives people belief in themselves and what they're doing. And then they look forward to the challenge of playing the higher ranked teams and you take it on from there.
Billy, when you look at Limerick football right now as a whole, like, for people who mightn't necessarily realise, what kind of state would you see it in? Like, you're obviously somebody who's very, very embedded in it, and hurling clearly took the fore last year and the success that they had. Like, where is football at now? Is this the start of maybe an emergence for Limerick?
Look, it's hard to predict the future and where it is. I suppose what I can say is, well, I can speak highly of the bunch we have. They're committed. They want to learn. They've got a level of ability. It's just trying to get the max out of that now to compete as high up as we can get to. But look, you know, I'm going to be really clear, like, we're not, there's no excitement of getting carried away because we beat Tipperary, we've been told us, and all of a sudden we're going to go on a journey that's going to be magical. It doesn't work like that. It's just, we've got to keep our feet in the ground and repeat the performance against Cork in the championship, because that's our next game. And see what that delivers us, and see what the championship will wind up in the championship, and then more importantly, to come back around again next year and have the same hunger, and to have a go ahead in the league, and that's it. As simple as that.
How frustrating is it for you, for somebody who obviously was very delighted to see your county win, you know, the hurling last year, but at the same time, kind of sees the resources that they might get and, well, aren't afforded to you? Like, is that something that would even weigh in your mind?
No issue. I think, you look, you've been asked that since the weekend, and I was asked leading up to it. No. Holland is always the number one game in Limerick in GAA terms, and it was no different back in the 90s, the 80s, the noughties. It's the same. So, you know, there's no issue in that individual. Okay, last year was a bit of frustration with me with the county board on a given topic in the lead up to the Clare game. But that's it. It's fair to say that they'll do what they can for us. But I suppose, you know, the love of football across the county might isn't at the level of, you know, the love of Hull, and that's much bigger than the county board, and that's it. But we work with what we have, we get on with it. Been too many years ago when Liam and I were with one of tours, we were managing the team, we were able to get to a reasonably high level being competitive. So while the resources and numbers might be there, you know, if we get everyone who harness it, you know, we certainly could be maybe further up than where we are if we can get a bunch of players that have come together and commit. But that's the journey we got to find ourselves out now. So personally, I don't have any issue whatsoever with the where football sits. We'd always like it to have it higher up, but you only have that if you have a population of people who really put the game as number one, and historically that's not the way it is in the mix, and that's it.
I suppose looking at it as from the positive perspective, you know, the kind of the collective pride was very obvious on the pitch afterwards, and you saw the scenes of the celebrations, which was really nice. And then on a personal basis, you mean you're obviously on a sideline alongside kind of a friend of yours in Liam Kearns. What does that add to it? Like, does that make it more bitter or more sweet, the fact that it's a guy you know so well that you're getting one over on, I suppose?
Yeah, look, it was a difficult one. You know, Liam and I have, you know, really friends, and we have been for many years. So look, I suppose we respect each other, and you know, Liam was trying to beat me, I was trying to beat him, and that's just the way it is, because that's the nature of sport. But after the game, it's not easy, you know. I knew where I was for Liam after that, and you know, your friends are your friends, and you know, they're always bigger than sport, and you've got to be mindful of that, even though you'll be happy with the win. And obviously, that put back Liam on the back foot, I suppose, and look, no better man to deal with them challenges than Liam and his record before. Sure, that improved that. So look, but it is. Look, it's just the way it happens, and that's it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's curious to hear you talk about the idea that this is something that Limerick need to build on, and maybe, you know, the fact that a lot of managers wouldn't necessarily be conscious of development or what goes on within the county. They're kind of focused on the day to day stuff. But you clearly are. Like, this is clearly something that maybe takes up time in your mind about the kind of future of Limerick football as well.
Yeah, well, look, I suppose I'm on the Limerick football scene for a long time, and it's close to my heart, and you know, the challenges the county bring and the commitments required, you've got to be really mindful of that with the efforts people are putting in. Now, the Limerick jersey traditionally hasn't been something people aspire to play with, and you've got to be very careful how you treat people and respect their efforts and treat them properly and respectfully. And sometimes that takes a journey and a building, because we're not in the position to be dismissing people lightly for stuff that might go on, or they're not treating just because the jersey comes before, and it's not like that. I take the approach that people come first, and you try and encourage them to come in and play with us and enjoy it and have fun, and then it'll set it up for, you know, the future. And there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes with the Football Academy under Paul Kinnock and Mother Scaven, and that's just trying to have something in place by the time all that comes through that'll sustain us, you know, and not have the challenges that I would have had and getting players in the last 2 years. So look, it's all part of the bigger family, really, to be honest.
And Billy, how involved would you be with that programme and Paul Kinnock, the idea of maybe developing something like grassroots football as well?
Well, look, I was involved with it for the 2 years prior to getting involved with the senior squad. But other than that, no, it's Paul and Morris and no two better men. So to lead that out, so look, they're working on that, and with a lot of other former county players we have coaching and so it is. But look, these things take time to come to fruition, and so they started the journey. I think it's maybe 4 or 5 years and going on, probably another 4 or 5, 6, 7 before we start to see the players come through to the county level. You know,
come here before you go. There's you probably are keen as this are aware of this as we are. There's been a lot of talk, especially after this result, about tiers within the football championship and the idea that maybe it needs a second tier or even, you know, potentially a third tier. And this result has been used as kind of an argument against that idea, or maybe even some people are talking about the fact that, you know, it proves that there's only a gap between the six and the rest, that, you know, and the rest of it, anyone can be anybody. Your own standing on that, like when you hear the idea of maybe a second tier for football, is that something you'd be in favour of?
Well, look, there's a lot of talk about it and this, that, and the other. And I suppose my view would be that if you have a tier championship, have it in such a way that if people, like, let's assume any county team in the country are down in division or division 3 or 4 or maybe the second tier, whatever they're looking at structuring it, that they'd have a way to get into the top championship. I mean, okay, it was fantastic for us. We beat Tipperary Sunday, but that's a one-off occasion, and we got our belief and satisfaction from it. But that means nothing more than that. Like, it's not going to land us in Munster finals or All Ireland finals or any of that old kind of stuff. Like, so we got to walk it and walk it. And you know, last year and the year before were tough years for us, and trying to keep people interested at that stage is difficult. Everyone sees the glory there, like Saturday night, but there's a lot of matches there when they weren't, and it was hard work, and people start questioning themselves, why are they doing this? But if you're playing against teams in your own level, like the league or maybe a tier championship, that gives players at our level, you know, a counter like us, renewed interest and makes it tangible. What I would say is we'd have to be structured properly. We would have to get the correct, I suppose, marketing, and the media would have to take interest in it, because if they don't take interest and do it, it all dies and it loses its way. Because so there's a lot to feed into it and a lot to buy into it and so forth. But while matches like this are great, they're few and far between, and we mustn't let the results, the data do the talking, and take it from there. Look, there's a whole lot of structure and different tiers, and the template is there in front of the organisation to review that and see what these counties are saying, how it works within, and go from there. So look, that's my view on it.
Yeah, and hopefully, I suppose we kind of see a workable solution come out of that. Come here. Next up is Cork, obviously, on the 1st of June. In terms of preparation for that, is that kind of a process of, like, maybe you didn't necessarily realise that game was coming? Like, you take that each week as it comes and kind of run into that game, I suppose, the same way you approached the last one?
Yeah, we usually start back at it Monday training, and we just prep again, and we deal with it, and see what faces in Cork, and then just look. Work on our development and improvement and performance, and see where it takes us.
Well, you've been very good with your time. Thanks a minute for talking to us today.
Okay, Marcus, I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
The impression of the game you get out of it, what you put into it, is like a walk of life. If you're good enough, go out and get it, no more about it. Your mother sends you down to the shop for a pound's worth of goods and she gives you 50 pence. You can't get the pound's worth of goods, can you?
That was savage. Jay loves nothing more than an underdog story, Mark.
Yeah, and as O'Shea pointed out on RTE, like, the Munster Championship is interesting in that you're so close to a Super 8. Like, if they can beat Cork now, they've got, you know, they'll probably lose to Kerry in the Munster final, but then they're still only one match away from the Super 8. So yeah. Like, it's such a difference compared to the likes of Derry losing yesterday and in Ulster, and how such a long road they have ahead of them to get into the last 8.
It does. I mean, like, it does showcase the ridiculousness of the provincial championship. Like,
on the theme of underdog stories, Guest Handicaps is back. I'm going to referee it now, and PJ Brown is coming in lieu of myself to try and take the title.
Making my debut here, actually.
Are you? Yeah.
Get the spread.
Oh, yeah. Now, what happens here? Has the title been vacated, or have you handed it to PJ?
No, it's this is like the interim belt here.
Oh, the interim champion.
Yeah, yeah. Whoever wins, I'll take on next week. I won't take on next week because I'm in Vienna.
We'll play for a different interim championship. This will be like the UFC. There'll be about 5 different interim handicap champions.
We've got 5 games here. We're going to start with football and Galway-Sligo. So Galway team who just kind of fell over the line against London. Still the same kind of injury list that we listed at the time. Playing Sligo this weekend. PJ, you're up first. What is the spread?
Martha, I'm going to say minus 10.
Mr. McFarley.
I got bitten by these spreads over the weekend. I got Carlo and Galway. I backed them to beat the spread. That worked. Loud to beat the spread against Wexford. That worked. Then, of course, Meath. You can never, ever trust.
Stop buying time here and give us an answer.
So I'm going to go one less. I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to say Galway minus 9.
Oh, you're buying on.
Oh, yeah?
2-0.
Yes. Good start. A good start.
We're Ulster next. Armagh and Down. Armagh, who really need a coming of age season, given how long Geezer has been there and the fact that they still haven't won an Ulster Championship game, which is just amazing. Like, it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
They all seem to struggle against defensive teams, particularly in Ulster, and then open up against other teams in the qualifiers. And then this weekend they're playing Paddy Taddy's Down.
Yeah, Armagh are pretty much the easiest to see dark horse there has ever been has ever been darked. Because everybody is saying they're a dark horse with the championship, which is getting me to believe now that they might be a white horse. I'm going to say, oh, this is really close, actually. This is hard to call even who's a favourite, never mind what the spread is. I'm going to say Armagh minus two.
Mr. PJ Brown.
A Farley tactic here. I'm going to say minus three.
Oh, it's minus one. It's, three nil.
That's good value there on Armagh, I think. Yeah.
The other game roster is obviously Cavan and Monaghan, which is on Sky Sports at 7 o'clock. Surprise, Mark hasn't mentioned that already on the podcast.
I've bitten my tongue a couple of times so far.
And then obviously Down in Penarma on Sunday in Park Elser. We're going to hurling, lads.
Oh, we're not doing Cavan and Monaghan.
No,
For God's sake! Sure, that's why it kept me. That's why it kept me mouth shut. I thought we'd get talked about it in this segment.
That's your expert segment. If there's no Kerry, there can't be Cavan. Carlo, lads, who I think we all said last week were way too wide against Galway, and they duly delivered. Martin Cavan, a masterclass in Pier Stadium. They're playing Kilkenny this weekend. First game at home in Dr. Cullen Park. And Peter Brown, I want you to tell me what the spread is.
This is a hard one to call. This is a huge game for Carlo Hurling.
Like, yeah.
Having Kilkenny come to their home ground is massive. And like Mark Farley, I'm going to buy myself a little bit of time here while I consider this. And I'm going to say it is Kilkenny minus 13.
Yeah, it's a hard one to call because you have one, I think Kilkenny... Obviously, as we were saying last week, Galway are ravaged by injuries. It's a strong Kilkenny team, but also the bookmakers will be a little bit wary of Carlo having beaten the handicap by so much last week.
Yeah.
But I still think it's going to be a bit higher than 13. I'm going to say Kilkenny minus 14.
It's Kilkenny minus 11, lads.
Go away.
Yeah. So I think last week, it was once bitten, twice shy, is what that says to me.
Yeah.
Tipperary and Waterford. We haven't really spoken about Tipperary too much, but I suppose we can talk about that game briefly now. The one glaring theme with this podcast is they managed to score 224 from play on Sunday, which is just obscene, really. All of a sudden now there's a win this weekend and they're looking really pretty. They're already being touted as a dark horse for All-Ireland title challengers. But Mr. Mark, what is the spread?
224 from play as well. I think maybe Cork's defensive frailties could be a little bit overplayed as well, because I take it with one caveat yesterday in that there were no frees being given. So if you were going to score, they were going to be from play, because at the end, I thought Cork were done out of about four frees that they should have had straight from the goal. But
at the same time, they were very loose, though. And you wouldn't, Bill Cooper pulling out with a back injury obviously didn't help, but they made four changes and only one was at the back. That was bringing on Damian Callaghan. Like, they don't seem to have too many alternatives to what's already there, who looked pretty loose at the weekend. I don't know. I think, as Jack Terrell said after the game, like, it's their one Achilles heel and it could prove really costly this summer.
They showed in the Sunday game, I think, the analysis of the
high side John camera, McGrath goal,
and the space that Bubbles had in behind was unbelievable. It was like Anthony Nash wondering if, like, am I supposed to step out here and match and, like, mark John O'Dwyer, because there was nobody within like 10 metres of him. It was a great pass.
You're playing your own game now and buying Mark time.
who's playing again? Tipperary and Waterford.
Waterford, who can't lose this game.
Yeah, Waterford can't lose it, but Tip are still going to be favourites, and Tip are going to be favourites by 3 points.
I am going to go minus two.
It's minus four.
What's the score now?
4-1.
4-1, I think so, yeah.
Right, Laois Antrim, Dunbar's only cup. Laois on a kind of two teams on a high after the weekend that was. You're playing for pride here, PJ.
I'm not too overly disappointed. It is my debut here. Yeah. You're like, if you know, I've a lot to learn.
You have to find your shape, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know. I'm gonna say Laois minus two.
Ooh. This is tricky. This is very tricky. I'm going to say Laois. What'd you say, Laois minus two?
Yeah.
Laois minus one.
It's Laois minus three. 4-2.
I didn't know which way. I go one side or the other.
The other game in the Drumbuck Thunder Cup is Westmeath against Offaly, also on Saturday. Westmeath, who obviously have huge aspirations to go up. We're out of time. Before we go, Mark, with a favour to ask everybody.
Yeah, there are a few different podcasts going up. We're podcast heavy this week, Morris. There's obviously the rugby podcast that you're on, but that should be on the balls.ie podcast feed, and that'll be up soon, reacting to the Champions Cup final. You can also get our dedicated Balls GAA channel by searching Balls GAA on all good podcast apps, and also the Balls Rugby one if you just want the rugby stuff. But you obviously don't just want the rugby stuff if you're listening to this podcast. But we also have a new pop culture podcast feed as well. It's called The Rewind. You can find that again on all good podcast apps. Just search The Rewind, where this week we will be bringing you our Game of Thrones player ratings. We're doing that every week for the last few episodes of Game of Thrones, and it's always a bit of crack, so make sure to check that out. That comes out every Tuesday afternoon.
Thanks, Mark. And thank you, PJ Brown, for ably deputising today.
I'm happy with my debut there, Morris. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening as well. We'll be back next week, but in the meantime, take it easy.